Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's Friday, so let's have a little bit of fun to go with our apologetics today. This hour, Jimmy Akin, who it has been at least 22, 23 hours since he's been in front of this microphone. We're going to do weird questions with Jimmy Akin. I always enjoy weird questions with Jimmy Akin, Jimmy, because you always come for that. We never get another apologist to do it. That has not happened yet.
No. Well, happy to be able to oblige.
It would probably be an unsuccessful show, Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin, if there were no Jimmy Akin here.
Well, it would certainly be different.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess so. I guess. Oh, yeah. That's a generous way to think about it. 888-318-7884 is our number, but most of the questions we're going to do are from the internet. So we get a lot of interesting, and I don't want to say that they're all weird, but as a general rule, the total effect of these calls today is these are just weird questions. And so it's fun to do them with Jimmy. And but before we do the weird questions, Jimmy, we have a question that I don't know if it even qualifies as a weird question, but it's a good question. So I wanted to get to it.
Okay.
I'm interested to hear the answer. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello.
In the Swedish New Testament, we name Lucas for Luke, Matthias for Matthew, Marcus for John, and Marcus for Mark, and Johannes for John.
Uh-huh.
But I am curious what their real original name is in their own language, which I am so excited to hear, because that's a great question, and I've never thought of it.
Okay.
Regards from a soon-to-be Catholic woman in Sweden, and she also really likes you because you explain everything in such an easy way.
Oh, that's very kind.
So,
and what's her name?
I'm missing it. Is it...
Annika.
I missed it. Sorry. Annika. Annika, thank you very much for that question from Sweden for Jimmy Akin. So how do we pronounce the names of the evangelists?
So it's a little tricky. One of the reasons is because we don't have audio recordings of people speaking back then.
Yeah.
And so we can only reconstruct how things were pronounced from what they wrote down.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the International Phonetic Alphabet at the time. So that means
they were so backwards.
Well, you know,
no recording.
Yeah. So as a result, all of our knowledge of how to pronounce these ancient languages is somewhat iffy.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
And partly that's also because people had different accents. They might be speaking the same language but pronounce it a little differently. That's why Peter gets fingered as a Galilean.
Oh, right.
When he's in the court of Caiaphas.
Because he's got that accent.
That Galilean accent. So they would have pronounced him a little differently from one region to another. Also, there are different variations of a lot of these names. But what I can tell you, I'll tell you the Greek first and then we'll do the Aramaic.
Okay.
So in Greek, Matthew's name is Matthias.
Matthias, okay.
Mark's name is Marcos.
Okay.
Luke's name is Lucas.
All right.
And John's name is Johannes.
I have to say, those are closer to the Swedish
than to
English.
To English, yeah.
She's pretty close there, Annika.
In Aramaic, they're a little bit different. Matthew is either Matthei or Matthei.
Okay.
Mark is Marcos. And you're pronouncing the Q towards the back of your mouth there, not the K towards the front.
And that's in Aramaic. Okay.
In Aramaic, Lucas, it also has that Q sound in the back of the throat. So it's like Luca.
Oh.
And then John in Aramaic is, in at least in the Peshitta Aramaic version of the New Testament, it's Yohanan.
Yohanan, okay.
Yeah. One also thing we ought to mention is, so Mark, his Jewish name is also John, but he's called by the Latin name Marcus, except they say it in Greek because they're Greek speakers, so they say Marcos instead of Marcus.
I gotcha.
But his name in Latin would have been Marcus.
I got you. So do you think that they just picked that one or it's related to some other name?
Many people at the time had bilingual names because they were living in a bilingual world. And so he had his He had his Aramaic name. He would have been called at home by his mom. But his father was apparently dead at this time because he's not mentioned, whereas Mark's mom is. But his father presumably was a Roman citizen, which would be why he then had a Latin name. Because typically, if you became a Roman citizen or if one of your ancestors became a Roman citizen, they would take a Latin name at that point, which is why Paul has the Latin name Paulus. Even though his Hebrew name was Shaul or Saul.
So when he went home, they'd have called him...
They probably would have called him... I mean, it's going to depend. Yeah. I mean, even Sting's mom calls him Sting these days.
She does.
She does, yeah.
Well, my mom would not do that.
Yeah.
I don't think she'd put up with that.
But usually you'd be called by your native language name at home, and then you'd be called by another language name when dealing with people who spoke that language.
So it's not quite the hard and fast kind of image we might get sometimes where Paul changed his name. Saul changed his name to Paul.
No, Saul did not. It's not a Simon to Peter thing. In his case, he just had both names.
Right.
And presumably the name Paul was one he inherited from his father or grandfather, who was the first one to become a Roman citizen and take that name.
Gotcha. Okay. So I think the obvious question here, well, maybe it's not obvious, but it strikes me. I would like to know the name of Jesus in those various.
So in Greek, Jesus is Jesus.
No, that's really close.
Yeah, only notice it's not Jesus. Every time I teach Greek to American speakers, I have to warn them.
Because they want to say Jesus.
Right. Yeah. In English, when we have an S between two vowels, so it's an intervocalic S,
right.
We tend to pronounce it as Z, which is why we say Jesus in English. But it's not – that rule does not apply to other languages. So in Greek, it's Jesus.
Got it.
Then in Aramaic, Jesus' name comes out a number of different ways depending on the type of Aramaic you're speaking.
Oh.
It, when I took Aramaic, we were taught to now I had it in my head a second ago and I'm blanking for a second. Ishoa.
Ishoa.
Yeah. With a vocal constriction and activation of the vocal cords at the end. So Ishoa. But it's also – it comes out differently. Isa, things like that.
In our chapel, we have a Divine Mercy portrait, and then the Jesus, I Trust in You is in Latin.
Uh-huh.
And there it's J-E-S-U.
Mm-hmm.
How would that have
Jesus.
Been pronounced? Jesu.
Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Jimmy is the author of many things, including A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist, and Teaching with Authority, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Says. Most of our questions, well, all of our questions come to us electronically.
Today. That's why we know they're weird. Because we pre-screened them.
Oh, yeah. We have to screen them for adequate weirdness.
Yeah, I have this real weird question. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Jesus have brothers?
That
wouldn't be weird enough.
Right. So we go for the real weird one. So can I go to James from Facebook then? James writes this, Jimmy. If teleportation is ever invented, then would a teleported Eucharist still be the body of Christ?
The answer is going to depend on the type of teleportation that you're using. And there are a number of different types of teleportation that have been proposed. One type is you pass through normal space, but you just do it really fast, like too fast to see.
Yeah.
And as long as the Eucharist isn't injured in that process, it's just moving through normal space just really fast.
Yeah.
And so it would continue to have the appearances of bread and wine, and so it would continue to have the real presence.
Okay.
There are other forms of what we might call non-destructive teleportation that have been proposed. Like maybe you don't go through normal space. Maybe you go through like a wormhole or something, or another dimension that maps onto ours in a non-one-to-one way.
Yeah.
So you're traveling a short distance in this other dimension even though – and you're not transversing the corresponding space in our dimension. So you like disappear from one spot and appear in another. And as long as, again, the Eucharist is not destroyed in the process of doing that, it's going to retain the real presence. Then there are what you could call destructive forms of teleportation. And the classic one is the one you see on Star Trek.
Yeah.
Now, actually, in some episodes of Star Trek, they kind of fudge about, is this really doing what they say or not? But if you decomposed the Eucharist into its subatomic particles, you know, the subatomic particles that are there in the accidents, then it would cease to have the appearances of bread and wine. And so the real presence would cease at that point.
Right.
And even if you then reconstituted those fields and particles so that they looked identical on the other end of the process,
right,
it wouldn't be the real presence anymore because the real presence had ceased and you didn't reconsecrate them to bring it back.
I would not get in that teleporter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's basically a murder machine.
That strikes me as just killing me and making a new me, sort of.
Well, it is, which is a real problem, which is why they fudge it in some episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And that's similar, even though that one's more science fiction at this point. We do have something similar today known as quantum teleportation, where it's possible to, quote unquote, teleport subatomic particles or even like atoms and stuff from one place to another. But really, it's another form of destructive teleportation, because what they're doing is they're transferring on the quantum level, they're transferring the information that applies to one set of particles in one place and sort of jumping that information at light speed to another set of particles that then conform to it.
Right.
And so it's going to end up with the same effect.
That strikes me as a potential one for a very, very long distance instantaneous communication. If you could.
Well, it's still light speed limited. So yeah, it's not going to be any faster than radio waves.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe one day we'll build an Ansible and we'll have the ability to do faster than light communication.
I don't know what an Ansible is.
It's a device that allows faster than light communication.
Oh, I like it. Jimmy Akin is our guest. It's Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin this hour. We'll take a break. Be right back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We'll be right back with more great answers from Jimmy today on Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
He is honored by the Church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the Church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy is the host, the creator of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World as
I don't have that kind of power. That requires.
I didn't say you were the creator ex nihilo.
Okay, good.
But you are. But you certainly use the materials God already had created.
Yeah. Well, I'm dependent on Him.
I've noticed that about you. You seem like your entire being is dependent on Him to exist moment
very
to moment.
Much so. Yeah.
The thing is, you're aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that everyone's aware of that dependence.
Yeah, true.
Moving on with our weird questions, Jimmy. Keith says this, all kidding aside, is there a parallel universe? And I just want to say, Keith, you don't have to start a question like that for Jimmy Akin with all kidding aside. He's going to take that question seriously.
I try to take every question seriously.
Is there a parallel universe?
So it depends on what you mean by that. And actually, it's funny you mentioned Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, one of my other podcasts, because just today, today's episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is about parallel worlds. It's
just came out today?
Just came out today. It's on the mystery of the multiverse.
Okay.
And you can just type in Jimmy Akin Mysterious World. You can also look on YouTube. We've got a version of it there. You can go to sqpn.com, whatever, however you find it.
Yeah.
We, in terms of science, we don't know if there are parallel worlds or not. It is possible, and many scientists think it's probable. Some are even convinced of it. But we really don't have scientific evidence at this point. There's no way we can directly detect other worlds. And so consequently, it remains a matter of philosophical speculation from a scientific point of view, not something we've been able to scientifically prove. From a religious perspective, though, we have a little bit more information because God has revealed to us that there is an invisible spiritual world which is inhabited, for example, by angels. It obeys different laws than the ones that that apply down here, which is why angels can do supernatural things, you know, miracles and stuff. And so it would seem that depending on how you want to define your terms, you could say that heaven is a parallel world.
Yeah.
So you could say we have at least a two-universe multiverse, depending on how you want to define your terms. Now, if you define universe to just mean everything that exists, well, then we're not going to have a multiverse because everything that exists is going to include both heaven and earth. But you know, that doesn't change the fact that within the set of everything that exists, there are these two very different realms.
Right.
The question is just what label do you want to put on those realms? Are they worlds? Are they universes? Whatever.
Yeah.
But it does seem that the invisible world is real and that it is different than our world, which is why it's invisible. Duh.
Because ours is visible. Yeah.
Now, you'll notice I mentioned heaven in that regard. I didn't mention purgatory and hell. The reason is purgatory and hell could just be states within the invisible world.
Oh.
So it's kind of like here in the material world, we have, you know, different planets and different regions of planets like North America versus South America. And it could be that purgatory and hell, since they're inhabited by the same kind of beings, angels and departed human souls, they could all be part of one overall realm.
Yeah.
And so they could be regions within that spiritual realm, or they could be separate realms. They also could just – they might not be like geographical regions but spiritual conditions within that that spiritual realm. So, for example, in Spes Salvi, his encyclical, Pope Benedict XVI proposed but did not require as a matter of doctrine the idea that the fire of purgatory is an encounter with the fiery love of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And so in that case, purgatory would be like a spiritual condition
in the
afterlife rather than a location in the afterlife. On the other hand, we should note that because some people have their bodies with them in heaven, like Jesus and Mary and maybe Enoch and Elijah and Moses, that it seems that this state, this spiritual world is at least capable of receiving physical bodies. They may not manifest in the same way they would manifest here on earth, but it seems that it's at least capable of receiving physical bodies. And so consequently, it interacts with our world in a kind of interesting way that it's capable of including material things, but it also goes beyond the normal material operation of things.
I hope that was satisfying. Keith, appreciate that question. Are there any – like I hate to keep adding to people's questions, but this just occurs to me. Are there any theories of parallel universes that you would say that no, that can't be, that's incompatible with the faith? Have you heard any of those? Or?
Not in principle.
Okay.
There are certain – like say imagine a world where God does not bring evil – does not bring good out of evil.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not going to exist because that's incompatible with God's nature.
It
might not be physically impossible, but God's not going to create that kind of world.
Right. Right, yeah. Got it.
Oh, by the way, one other thing regarding the spiritual realm. We do have some indication that there may be more than one heaven. You know, you've heard the expression seventh heaven. That actually goes back to very ancient Jewish and Christian literature. There's a document from the first century called a Christian document from the first century called the Ascension of Isaiah, where the prophet Isaiah is depicted as being given a kind of tour of the spiritual world, where he ascends first through the firmament, that's the air above earth, and then he goes up through seven heavens to see where Jesus and the Holy Spirit and the Father are. And then he descends back through these realms and watches Jesus in his vision become incarnate. And so we don't have a biblical reference to the seventh heaven, but we do have St. Paul referring in 2 Corinthians to being caught up to the third heaven.
Right.
So what he means by that, it doesn't have to mean that there's three layers to heaven in the afterlife. Some people have proposed that, well, maybe the first heaven is the air, the atmosphere. The second heaven is the realm of the stars, and the third heaven is the realm of the angels, in which case – we have two of the heavens being physical and only one spiritual. But on the if you look at this background, it you know could well mean that there are multiple heavens, and those could be construed as multiple different worlds or universes.
Keith, again, thank you very much for the question. It's Weird Questions Day with Jimmy Akin here on Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, actually, Carlo Broussard will be here. So this hour is Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. Matthew says, if we discovered extraterrestrial life, would we evangelize them or only teach them the cardinal virtues?
Well, we could certainly evangelize them in terms of telling them what God has done for our race. So we could share the good news of Jesus with them. The question would be, how do they relate to the good news? Do they even need to be saved? Maybe they're an unfallen race and are not in need of redemption. If they are in need of redemption, then would the redemption of Christ cover them? Now, it's not a question of did Christ pay enough on the cross to cover them? He did. He made infinite satisfaction, and so consequently, it would cover any number of sins committed by any number of species. But the question would be, does God mean it to apply to these folks? And that's a decision for God to make. It would ultimately require the study of theologians and eventually a magisterial decision by the church to settle the question for sure. But I think an indicator would be, do the aliens want to have Christ's redemption applied to them? If they do, the presumptive answer would be that it can be. This is related to the situation of the angels, because the angels who fell are not redeemed. But the reason for that – they're not able to be saved. But the reason for that is they don't want to be. Okay. One of the things that the Catechism of the Catholic Church points out is that God's mercy is not limited. The reason the angels who are fallen don't get saved is not because Jesus' sacrifice is inadequate to cover them, but because they don't want it.
Okay.
And so if the aliens are fallen and say, oh, we don't want to be saved, well, then they're in the same category as the angels. But if they say, oh, yeah, we want to be saved, we want, you know, to be saved through Jesus, then the presumption would be they can be. Now, it's also possible, though, that they could have been saved through other means, because God might have a special different way for them to be saved, maybe involving an incarnation on their planet.
All right. Okay. So ultimately, or at its base, then, sharing the good news or evangelizing is a matter of telling the story of what happened to us.
Yeah.
And then people can do what they
– and if God has had dealings with them –
that we can
they could evangelize us, tell us what God did with them, but it wouldn't mean we need to be saved their way, because God's already shown us the way that we need to be saved.
Maybe they saw Elijah going by on his way.
Maybe. Maybe they left a place for him in case he comes back.
Or no, was it Elijah or Isaiah that you said? Isaiah?
No, Elijah.
Oh, Elijah, yeah.
Well, Isaiah had the visionary ascent.
That's the one that, right. Yeah, we saw that guy. He came by here. Mm-hmm. Weird questions with Jimmy Akin today. So we'll take calls, I guess, but for the most part, we're going to depend on the internet ones because we know that they are genuinely weird. Jimmy, let me give you another one here. Jeremy asks, what is the church's stance on ghosts, specters, and hauntings? Can a soul that's departed this life stick around to, quote, haunt things that things, or can these be interpreted as demons trying to trick us?
Well, the church doesn't have a stand on ghostly phenomena like hauntings. It does have a stand on ghosts. They're real, because ghost is just another word for spirit, and it teaches that human spirits are real and do survive death, and sometimes God allows us to interact with them, like in the apparitions of the saints.
I'm sure there's more on this.
There's more on
this. So we'll talk more about ghosts when we come back on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hello, this is Bishop Jeffrey Monfort, Bishop of the Diocese of Steubenville. Make sure you keep it on Catholic Answers Live. Yeah. God bless you.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart, and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to the shop at Catholic.com.
Al Cresta says, "The greatest doctrinal obstacle to my return to the Catholic Church was fear that Catholics had no basis for or boundaries on the Marian dogmas. If only Tim Staples had written Behold Your Mother then. I can't think of a more insightful, comprehensive single volume that persuades so thoroughly. Great, truly great piece of apologetics. Order your copy of Behold Your Mother today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. Do you have questions about the Catholic faith? Listen for the best of Called to Communion on Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern and live on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Called to Communion on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Friday, and we try to do some fun stuff on Fridays. And Jimmy Akin is here for Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. All the questions for today, I think I misspoke a couple times before. All the questions today have already been selected. They were sent to us via various electronic means. In the future, if you'd like to have your question on Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin, you can certainly email us at radio@catholic.com or if you're one of those people that communicates with Jimmy online and his various media, go ahead and send them there as well.
So we were doing ghosts.
Oh, we were doing ghosts. Yeah, right.
So English is a language that has this weird double vocabulary that's partly Latin in origin and partly German in origin.
Right.
And so we tend to have two words for almost everything. That's why we have pigs and swine and dogs and hounds and cats and felines. And it's also why we have ghosts and spirits, because the German word Geist, ghost, is the same as the Latin – means the same thing as the Latin word spiritus or spirit. And so consequently, since we have spirits – both in the forms of angels and human spirits, we have ghosts. And sometimes God lets us interact with them. In terms of hauntings, now a lot of people, when they think they're being haunted, a lot of times there's a natural explanation. Yeah. Sometimes it could be a demon messing with them, but it's not impossible that God would allow either a saint or a soul in purgatory to manifest in some way to a person on earth, including in ways that could be mysterious. And actually, there's a tradition down through the centuries where people, Catholics, have reported exactly this, and it's been taken seriously. So it's not to be dismissed. If you want to learn more about that, check out the very first episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, which is all about ghosts.
All right. Thank you very much for that question. Who was that? It's Jeremy. And this one's from Susan. How can we square scientific discoveries of hominids, human-like beings, and their development with the Adam and Eve story? So so it's an evolution Adam and Eve story, and we know that there are hominids other than ourselves, hominids even other than Neanderthals, all kinds.
Yeah.
So how do we square that with the Adam and Eve story?
Well, there are multiple ways of doing it. One way is by saying, okay, you had these early populations of hominids that God was guiding, you know, their evolution, and they would have had souls because every living thing has a soul. The soul is the life principle of the body. If you don't have a soul, you're dead. Mm-hmm. As James says in James chapter 2, the body without the spirit is dead. Mm-hmm. So they would have had souls, but if they were pre-human, they wouldn't have had human souls. Mm-hmm. And so their souls wouldn't have had full reason, and they might not have survived death. Because we know that human souls have full reason and that they do survive death. We don't know about other souls.
Yes.
That's something that is a matter of theological speculation, not a matter of church teaching. And so although a common opinion is that animal souls at least don't survive death, but again, that's theological speculation.
Right.
So in terms of mapping the known history of these hominids onto mankind, considered theologically speaking, it's a little hard to say where to draw the line. But presumably, as you know, God was guiding the development of these life forms, he was giving them souls that were adequate and corresponding to their physical forms.
Yeah.
And so those souls would have been different at different times, just like, you know, the soul, even though lions and tigers are both, you know, cats, the lion soul is not going to be the same as a tiger soul.
Right.
And so as these hominids developed, God would have given them souls appropriate to their bodies. And then at some point when you had the first theologically true human, God gave that person the first true human soul.
Okay.
And so when in our history that would have occurred is a matter of debate. It's not easy to draw lines between different species under any circumstances.
Right.
And it's especially not in these circumstances because we are missing so much information from back then. It's possible that Neanderthals could have counted as modern humans. It's possible, theologically speaking, even though they weren't our subspecies, they weren't Homo sapiens sapiens.
But they may well have had rational souls.
Exactly. They could have. We don't know. They might have just been similar but not fully rational.
Yeah.
That's a question that's still up in the air. The same is true of other species or subspecies of man that we know existed, like the Denisovians. One reason to think that they might have been fully modern in the theological sense is because we were able to breed with them. We know that humans, based on looking at the human genome, we know that humans bred both with Neanderthals and with Denisovians and with a recently discovered Neanderthal-Denisovian hybrid subspecies.
Really?
Yeah. The computer found that. We had an AI doing deep pattern searching in the human genome and discovered, guess what? There used to be a Denisovian Neanderthal hybrid and we interbred with it.
Thanks, computer.
Yeah. So So it's a little unclear, you know, where to draw the line, but that's the seems the most plausible basic way of reconciling all this. There are other questions you could ask, but in terms of the basic one, that's how I'd approach it.
Susan, thank you very, very much for that question. I'm sure that many, many people have that question too. Fabian asks, will those who have died and been buried on Mars miss out on the final resurrection?
No. If we have people buried on Mars at the time the resurrection occurs, they will get to participate too. The resurrection of the dead and the judgment of all the human dead is something that's a teaching of the faith. And so if you're a human and you're dead, then when Jesus comes back to judge the world, you're going to participate and you'll consequently get to experience heaven if you died in God's friendship.
And you might not decompose, though. If they bury you on Mars.
Well, you might not. You know, it's
not a lot of microbes there. I jumped the gun on that.
Also, the water on Mars may be like more acidic than it is here on Earth, and that could also decompose stuff.
Got it.
But it's usually frozen.
Okay, so, that's good. So you don't have to get back to Earth to die if you're there.
That's already pretty clear. Yeah.
You don't have to feel – if you're on Mars and you're feeling sick, don't worry about your immortal soul.
Right. You'll still be raised and get to be in heaven if you're
– Fabian, I really appreciate you clearing that up. I have doubts about whether I'll ever make it to Mars.
Well, there may one day be bishops on Mars. They may have to make ad limina visits back to Earth.
Excellent point, Jimmy.
Someone should write a book about that.
I wish someone would write a book about a bishop making an ad limina visit from Mars.
You could even call it ad limina.
Yes, it would.
But you could find it on Amazon right now.
At this very moment. Jimmy, you're all right. I appreciate that.
No problem.
I got some really big news I want to share.
What's that?
Going on pilgrimage to Rome.
Hey.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about this on air until now, and I am very excited about this for very—
Is this a spoiler? Are you spoiling this now?
Am I spoiling it?
You're talking about it on the air and it hasn't been announced?
Yes, this is definitely a spoiler.
Okay, right, so now. Spoiler warning, so you're going on a pilgrimage to Rome. Who's going with you?
Well, Chris Check's going to go, our president.
And, I wish we could talk to him about it.
And also our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, is going.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure it would be great to hear from him too on
these men are practically Romans themselves. They've spent so much time there and know so much about it. But the thing that I really am excited about is we are seriously going on pilgrimage to Rome. Like we are going to go to the Colonna Palace Hotel and we are going to stay there. We're not getting on buses and, and it's not all that Is schlepping a word that you can say on there? I think so, schlepping.
Yeah, but it's just Yiddish. Don't be afraid of Yiddish.
Well, I don't like to use words that I don't know.
You don't
know
want to be a schlemiel.
Or a schlemazel, I suppose. Yeah. And we are just going to live in Rome for a week. This hotel, because Chris Check recommended, I mean, he got us into this.
Okay.
He said, go to this area. It's right in the heart of everything. It's like halfway between the Colosseum and the Trevi Fountain, I think. It's
which hill is it on?
I don't know. It's one of the
question I'd like to ask Chris.
One of seven. Chris Check, thanks for coming in here to talk about this.
Hey,
Are you as excited about this as I am?
Yes, I'm here to answer questions about our pilgrimage to Rome. It's actually not on a hill. It's in the historic center.
In the historic center of Rome. You're across the street from the Italian Parliament.
That's true.
And we're not going anywhere.
Well, a couple of days we'll probably get a bus because one day we'll go to St. Agnes outside the walls.
Yeah.
Which was one of my favorite churches in the city, or actually outside the walls of the city. It has a great catacomb. No one ever goes there, so it's never crowded. The original church is probably 4th, 5th century, something like that.
Wow.
St. Agnes is buried there. And there's also the foundation of one of the original Constantinian basilicas. Because when Constantine was making his program of gradually introducing Christianity to Rome, he quite rightly doesn't have the nerve. Well, he might have had the nerve. He's too prudent to start setting up Christian churches right in the historic center, right under the
because there were still all these pagans that had to be dealt
precisely.
With.
And he's measuring his time. So St. Paul outside the walls, the original St. Peter's over by the Vatican Hill, St. Agnes outside the walls. So Santa Croce, Holy Cross. So these original Constantinian basilicas are all kind
outside.
Out on the periphery. And we're going to see some. So there will be a couple of days on the bus. But you're absolutely right. There's going to be a lot of walking, because if there is a city better for walking in the world than Rome, I don't know what it is.
Have you been to Chula Vista? Okay, I'm just...
Actually, my son goes to high school down there, so yes, but I'm going to go with Rome for walking around.
Okay, so, but the deal is, though, in order... And what I meant was by getting on buses, like, you know, get up in the morning, go to another hotel, that kind of thing.
No, we're staying in the same place, and Si, you're absolutely...
So you get to unpack.
You just unpack and stay in Rome. And the problem with that, however, with going and staying in the heart of historic Rome in a hotel, is you can't get that many rooms. So we can only take 20 couples and 10 singles with us.
For a total of 50 persons.
Total of 50 people.
And so, my friends, this is going to sell out very quickly. In fact, somebody got wind of it and already signed up.
I know. Somebody, before we even talked about it.
Yep. So when is it occurring, and where do people go to sign up?
Okay, so it's November 4th through 13th this year.
And this is a great time to go to Rome. My friends, November is beautiful. The weather is going to be absolutely – it's like San Diego November.
None of that summer heat. None of that.
Right, and none of the summer crowds.
And so November 4th to the 13th, we'll do the Scavi –
absolutely, excavations under St. Peter's, where we go and see St. Peter's bones and learn that story of how very recently they were discovered there. And
yeah.
If there's a theme for this, it's Christian Rome, right? Or rather, Rome transformed in Christ.
Yeah.
And we're going to see how Christian Rome really didn't replace pagan Rome, but it just transformed it. So many of the churches we'll see are, in fact, built on the top of old pagan temples, like Santa Maria Sopra Minerva, for example, mm-hmm. where St. Catherine is buried.
Or right. Some used to be, like the Pantheon.
That, exactly, right. One of the most, probably the most perfect building in the world.
And really?
Well,
it's really awesome.
It is pretty extraordinary.
Catholic answers, just pilgrimages.
Just don't hurl anyone off the Tarpeian Rock.
No, we won't,
but we will see the Tarpeian Rock.
Yeah. Right? And we'll talk about the kings and the age of the Republic and the Empire.
You're not going to get this on any other pilgrimage.
Father Hugh Barber knows this city so well. And it's going to be a great gift. I've been maybe a dozen or so times. He really knows the city.
Yep.
And we're going to have a wonderful time.
And he's one of the world's great chaplains, and he'll be preaching and celebrating Mass for us here in Confessions. You go to CatholicAnswersPilgrimages.com, and you'll be there. We're taking 20 couples. We're taking 10 singles. We're just going to stay right there in the heart of Rome, and it is going to be an absolutely amazing pilgrimage.
I think the price includes airfare.
From New York. Yep. Airfare from New York is included. Yep. So you can find us on Canterbury Pilgrimages. We've partnered with them for this. Or you can just go to CatholicAnswersPilgrimages.com, and that'll take you to the sign-up page at Canterbury
Catholic
Pilgrimages.
Catholic Answers Pilgrimage or Pilgrimages?
Pilgrimages. It's got the S on it. I'm pretty sure. I'll type it in here.
Catholic Answers Pilgrimage. I think it's Catholic Answers Pilgrimage.
I think you might be.
Try both, folks. You'll find it.
it's Catholic. Come on, Chris. I hate to have to correct you all the time, but it's Catholic Answers Pilgrimage.com.
That's
no
right.
S. Catholic Answers Pilgrimage.com. And I still have never admitted I'm wrong to Chris Jack.
It's okay, Si. You're a good man.
I can't wait for this.
We're going to have a wonderful time.
Catholic Answers Pilgrimage.com. Right back on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic radio, I believe, is the greatest tool for evangelization that the church has today. And I know this because we hear from people all over the world that tell us all the time they came to faith in Christ, in the Catholic Church, through Catholic radio. Guy that lives right next door to you, he might not ask you about your Catholic faith, but he'll ask us. He'll call in and say, "Tell me about the Catholic Church."
Dr. David Anders thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin. here on Catholic Answers Live. Next hour, Carla Broussard will be right here in studio with us. We're going to do the Bible Blueprint for Purgatory. So join us for that. Michelle asked this, Jimmy.
Okay.
She says, I was once asked if angels could appear as dogs and cats.
Well, I would say yes. Angels can appear. Of course, they don't have bodies themselves, but they can appear as if they had human bodies. And so if they can do that, then I don't see why they would be limited to just human bodies. It's not like they have a native shape. So any shape we see them in is an artificial one. And I would assume they could change their shape just like you could change the skin on an avatar. And in fact, in some of the visions that we see recorded in the Bible, they at least have animal parts. Sometimes you'll see like the cherubim will have, a head like an ox or a lion or eagle.
Right.
And they have wings, both them and the seraphim do. And so so consequently, they're already displaying animal parts. They could go full animal if they wanted.
They could go full animal. I like the way – is that a technical theological term?
Oh, yeah.
Go full animal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's in all the manuals.
It's in the Summa, I think.
It's in the Summa. Okay. I must have missed that part of the Summa. Heather asks binaural and isochronic tones.
Right.
I was having trouble with my eyes for a minute. Okay. It is safe. Is it safe as far as from a spiritual standpoint? Does the church have anything to say on these? I listen to them for sleep.
Okay. So we should mention first, because not a lot of people have heard of binaural beats or isochronic tones. Binaural beats are tones that are slightly different than each other, and you play one of them in your right ear and one of them in your left ear, and your brain combines them into a third tone. Isochronic tones are tones that are identical to each other and are put out at a certain frequency rate. So you might have 10 of them a second.
Uh-huh.
That you hear. And there are claims that these are useful for various health things like relaxation or getting to sleep or things like that.
Right.
The church has no teaching on this. So it's going to be left up to medical science, psychological science to sort out, is there a real therapeutic effect that these have or not? Some people may have an effect that's due to the placebo effect, and that's not to be dismissed. I mean, if you think, hey, this is going to help me relax, well, even if it wouldn't help someone else relax, if you think it's going to help you relax and get to sleep, it may do that. So whether the relaxation and soporific or sleep-inducing effects are intrinsic to these sounds or whether they're there's something that you need to have the expectation this is going to do it for me. As long as it works for you, there's not going to be an in principle problem with it morally. And so I would say if it helps you get to sleep, that's fine. Personally, I have Alexa read me audiobooks at night to help my brain from going around in circles.
I'm assuming
whatever works
Alexa
for you.
Is not a human who comes over and does that.
It's the AI that lives on my nightstand.
Ah, you have an AI living on your nightstand.
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing for you. I thought I was going to have something better, but I got nothing. Heather, thanks for that question. Lauren, what may the existence or non-existence of the Holy Grail mean for the faith?
So the Holy Grail, as people will know, is the cup chalice that Jesus used at the Last Supper. And there have been claims that it was preserved down through history, and some people have even famously gone on quests to find it. There are actually some candidates that have been proposed as the Holy Grail that you could go see today. Whether any of them are real is something that I am skeptical of, although to be honest, I haven't looked into the data, so I haven't tried to check out the provenance of these artifacts.
Okay.
I do think it's somewhat unlikely that we would still have the original cup that Christ used after all this time, and given that the urge to treat it as a relic would not have developed immediately.
Ah, yeah, I see.
So now, if someone had it for us today, it would be awesome, and we would immediately preserve it and stuff.
Yeah.
But
right.
But back then, it was a cup that Jesus happened to use at Passover. They might have used it at the next Passover for typical Passover wine that wasn't even consecrated. We don't know. But if it did exist, it would be cool. It would be something that that would show a special sign of God's providence and care for future generations, his love for future generations who would have this impulse to treat it as a relic, and it would satisfy that impulse.
Yeah.
So it would be a nice thing that God could do, but not something he would be obliged to do. One thing to keep it in perspective is every single chalice used at every single Mass holds the precious blood.
Ah, yeah.
And so it's not like the Holy Grail is unique. The Holy Grail is unique in the sense that it was the first one.
Right.
And that Jesus himself used it, but it's not unique in the sense of it's the only vessel that ever holds the precious blood.
Ah, that's very – okay. Very, very interesting. Let's go to Paul. I'm just going to try to work through some here. If limbo does exist as the afterlife for unbaptized infants,
mm-hmm.
are they aware of their status –
as being in limbo,
yes,
as opposed
not
to
being
heaven.
In heaven. Yeah.
Well, we don't really know. Limbo, number one, may not exist. The idea of limbo, for people who may not be aware, is that it's a theological speculation to account for where children and others who die without baptism, but who also don't have personal sin. Children who die very yeah. young, stuff like that. They've never committed a personal sin, because they don't have the reason to do so, the capacity of reason to make that kind of choice. So they shouldn't experience punishment
right.
in the afterlife. But they also, without baptism, they don't have the guaranteed way to get God's grace into your soul.
Right.
So this is a speculation. Now, theologians have also said, well, God's not limited by the sacrament, so he could give his grace to people even without baptism. But if he didn't, and so if there was a limbo where people would go to not experience punishment but also not have the full glory of being united with God, then they could have they could be in a number of different conditions. One of the speculations when limbo was a popular idea was that they would have great natural happiness,
mm-hmm.
just not the supernatural happiness of being fully united with God. They're obviously partially united with God because everything is, or it wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Would they be aware that there was a higher level of happiness that they didn't have? They could be, because all of us who aren't the greatest human being ever
yeah.
are going to be aware that there is a higher level of happiness that we could have had. But we're not going to resent that. We're not going to be pained by it. We're going to be grateful for what we do have. And the same would happen for people in limbo who are aware there is a greater level of happiness. They're just going to be grateful for what they've got.
Thank you very much for that, Paul. Marino says this, Jimmy, debunk flat earth. Many folks use Bible to prove flat earth.
So this is kind of a big question, and I'm going to be devoting a future episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World to this because it is a big question. from a religious perspective, the Bible uses the language of phenomenology, which means it describes things according to appearances. Thus, it talks about the sun rising and setting because the sun appears to rise and set. It talks as if the earth is flat. Because from a terrestrial perspective on the surface of the earth is so big, it looks flat most of the time.
Right.
It also talks about the sky as if it's a bowl because the sky looks like a bowl
right.
that's been set on this flat plate. But all of this is just the language of appearances. If you want to know whether it's literally true, you have to – not just rely on these poetic descriptions, but do tests. And one of the classic tests was the fact that even in the ancient world, they could see when a ship is going over the horizon, the mast disappears last. It doesn't look like it's shrinking into the distance as a body. Part of it goes down over this hill of water, and then eventually the top part of it goes down, thus showing the curvature of the earth.
Thank you very, very much to everybody who shared their weird questions. If you've got a weird question you'd like to ask Jimmy, just send it to us at radio@catholic.com. Jimmy Akin, thanks for all your service this week.
My pleasure.
Thanks for a very weird hour.
My pleasure.
Wasn't that weird?
See you next week.
Yeah. Okay. See you next week, Jimmy. Coming up next, Carlo Broussard will be here. We're going to talk about the Bible blueprint for purgatory. Oh, I think some people might be surprised there is a Bible blueprint for purgatory. Well, if you are surprised or want to know about it, 888-318-7884 is the number.